Welcome to the Follow My Lead podcast, where we transfer stories and best practices of today's leaders to the leaders of tomorrow with your host, John Eads.
Welcome back to Season 5. I am excited you're here. And before we get into our guest this week, Matt Tenney, who's just a fascinating guy, I want to touch on it is Thanksgiving week in the U.S., and it's my favorite holiday of the year, mostly because I get to eat, but it's also because I'm just grateful for so many things in my life, and I think you should be as well. Thanksgiving is really all about gratitude, and a good friend of mine sent me a card this week that had the definition of gratitude on it, and it said, "Gratitude is a noun, the quality or feeling of being grateful or thankful. There's really one way to define it, but there are so many ways to feel it." And I feel it so often, and I'm so grateful for you, our audience, for listening every week. I'm hoping that we get to make an impact on you. I love to get the feedback from people about how big of an impact this is having on their lives. So I just wanted to say that I'm grateful for you this Thanksgiving season. And if you are in the U.S., I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your family. If you're outside of the U.S., please take a moment to just be thankful for everything that you've been given in your life and the people in your life. So that's my Thanksgiving pitch. It's a fantastic holiday. But today is a great opportunity for you, and it was a wonderful opportunity for me because I had Matt Tenney. He's a social entrepreneur and the author of Serve to Be Great: Leadership Lessons from a Prison, a Monastery, and a Boardroom, as well as the author of The Mindfulness Edge. He's also an international keynote speaker, a trainer, and a consultant with the prestigious Perth Leadership Institute. He works with companies and associations, universities, and nonprofits to develop highly effective leaders who achieve lasting success by focusing on serving and inspiring greatness in the people around them. He has one of the most unique and fascinating stories that you'll hear right at the beginning of the podcast, where he planned to steal $2.7 million from the government only to determine it was a bad idea that same day. But it was just too late. He ended up spending 6 years in a military prison. And I was almost giddy to have Matt on the show because Matt's book made just a really big impact on me and how I think about servant leadership and my own leadership journey. So I asked Matt some really tough questions around servant leadership, particularly what it is and how do you sustain it over a long period of time. We also touched on one of his techniques for an out-of-office reply for his email, and he talks about why taking control of your email inbox can have a huge impact on your ability to invest in your people. I could go on and on about our conversation, but all I would say is get your deep thinking hat on, because this conversation really goes down to that level, which is exactly what I wanted. So without further ado, here is my interesting conversation with Matt Tenney. Just a quick housekeeping item. This podcast is brought to you by LearnLoft, an organization focused on teaching modern professionals how to add value to their organization and the world. Their leadership library subscription comes with access to 6 online programs, 25 micro-learning courses, member-only webinars, and personal coaching sessions. They have a special offer for podcast listeners only at learnloft.com/special. Well, Matt, thanks for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, John. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you have one of the most unique professional journeys of probably anyone walking the earth. For the audience that doesn't know who Matt Tenney is and sort of haven't read the book Serve to Be Great, give the condensed version of your journey.
Sure. I guess if you mean by unique, you mean the worst failure, then that's me. So my current professional journey started with just a tremendous failure and an act of stupidity and dishonesty. So I was serving as an officer in the Marine Corps back in 2000, 2001, and it was right out of college. I had joined the Marine Corps, and about 2.5 years in, I took a half-hearted shortcut to success, and I arranged the unauthorized delivery of a pretty large sum of government money. And once I had the delivery arranged, I realized, well, there was absolutely no way that I could go through with it, and I abandoned the whole thing. But it was too late. You know, the steps that I had taken to arrange that delivery made me guilty of a fraud. And as a result of being so stupid and doing something dishonest, I ended up spending 5.5 years confined to a military prison. And at first, you know, I thought that was the end of my life. I beat myself up for quite a long time. And it actually ended up becoming the best thing that ever happened to me over that 5.5 years. About a year into my time there, I started learning about mindfulness training, which is just a simple practice, a way of training the mind to function more optimally. And after about 6 months of really diligent practice, I was thriving in that military prison, and I was actually happier there than I'd ever been in my life. So that gave me a tremendous amount of confidence in the practice, and I decided to go very deep with the practice. I'd been learning from monastics. I ended up living and training as monks live and train for the last 3.5 years that I was there, and then lived in a monastery after leaving confinement, and almost ordained to become a monk for the rest of my life. And really what the big shift was, in addition to learning how to be happy with nothing, is that that monastic ideal is an ideal that we devote ourselves completely to the service of others. And that completely transformed my experience of confinement, and has completely transformed my life. And so my focus ever since has just been on what can I do to be of greater service to the people around me and to my community and even to the world at large. So I went on to co-found a couple small nonprofits, and after a few years of running some small nonprofit organizations, I wondered, well, maybe I could serve on a larger scale, you know, if I go out and help leaders to apply this same shift towards being more focused on serving, especially serving our team members, and helping them see the connection between how that focus on serving actually results in a better bottom line over the long term. And so that's what led to the work that I do now, where, you know, I do training and keynote speeches at different conferences, trying to inspire people to make this connection between service and actually not only enjoying your life more, but having better business outcomes, and then offering ways for people to do that at a very high level and to do it consistently.
Well, it's a fascinating story. And the first time I heard it, Matt, it was like, it was one of the most unique stories to think that sometimes we're put in positions that seem like the end of our lives, and they end up, even as you mentioned a few minutes ago, that being the best thing that ever happened to you. And now think of all the lives that you've impacted because of that poor decision. It's almost, it almost would get you to tear up when you watch you tell the story on a video. It was phenomenal when I first saw it. But what I want to touch on, a couple things that came out of that. The first, you talked about service and serving other people. You've mm-hmm. somewhat become an authority on servant leadership. How do you define servant leadership?
Well, there's a lot of ways to approach, you know, what someone would define as a servant leader. And the guy who coined the term is a gentleman named Robert Greenleaf. And that idea of servant leadership has been around for a long time. But he coined the term in the business world a few decades ago. And little by little, more and more organizations are realizing that operating with a servant leader mentality is the way to go. Now, to just make it as absolutely simple as possible, you know, the Greenleaf and his organization, they have many, many elements to what it is to be a servant leader. But just to put it most simply, it's a leader who, before we got on the call here, or on the podcast, you know, we were talking offline, and you had mentioned how you kind of see leaders who are really love their people, but they also create these teams that have high levels of accountability and execution. And you'd mentioned how that seems to be very similar to parenting, you know, especially with creating an environment of discipline. And that may be, I think, the simplest way that I would put it. Like, so being a servant leader is where you care about your people to the extent where you're more interested in what you can offer them and their long-term success, their long-term well-being, than you are on short-term profit. And that is how servant leadership applies directly to team members. Now, in the larger scheme of things, servant leadership also applies to how you're serving all the stakeholders. So, for instance, in a for-profit company, instead of just serving the shareholders, you're looking at how can you serve team members, how can you serve the community, how can you serve vendor partners. And the idea is, you know, creating win-win situations as often as possible, which intuitively makes perfect sense, right? Over the long term, you're going to have a lot better business outcomes doing that.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, Matt. Even when I first heard your story, you talked about how you were financially driven early in your life, even back in your Marine Corps days. And then even once you know, after the situation happened and you were incarcerated, you still had this mindset of, well, if I could just get financial freedom. How do you define success today different than you defined it then? And I want to try to make the connection to servant leadership, because I don't think you can accurately be a servant leader with just the idea of financial being your measure of success. Or can it be?
It's probably more challenging to do that. And, you know, if that's what you're focused on, that you know, if your primary drive is finance, then we as humans tend to spend a lot more energy and attention on what it is that is our primary drive. So it's a little bit harder to do it. You could still do some of the outward things, some of the tactical things of developing team members and, you know, creating an organization where there's a lot of trust and safety. But it's just more challenging if in the back of one's mind we're always thinking about, you know, how can we maximize profit this quarter, every single quarter. And unfortunately, that is not a recipe for long-term success. And if publicly traded companies, shareholders demand it. And that's why you see a lot of big companies get into this spiral of eventual failure, where, you know, they start off focusing on short-term financials, and then when revenues go down, they say, well, how do we make the numbers work? And the first things that have to go are things like training and benefits, and that decreases morale, and then that further hampers sales, and then with the morale decrease and sales going down, customer service starts to fail, and before you know it, you're just in a position where it's almost impossible to get back to growth and long-term profitability. So it's a lot easier if we say, well, yes, we understand that in order to be viable as a business, we have to be profitable. We have to mind expenses. We have to continuously be innovating. We have to continuously provide absolutely amazing customer service, especially in today's market, where that may be the best form of marketing that we have is providing an amazing customer experience. And so all those things are a lot easier if the primary drive is to say, well, what can we do to make another person's life better? So, you know, if I'm thinking, well, what can I do to make the lives of my people better? And that's my primary drive. Like, why am I showing up to work today? Well, yeah, I know that I'm going to get a paycheck, or I know that if I'm an owner, I'm going to get distributions from my company. But that's not the primary drive. That's just, we need to do something to earn a living, right? To provide for our family. So do something that we enjoy or that we're good at, and hopefully that inspires us. But the money is just a side effect, you know, of really focusing on what I think is really the core driver for all of us, which is helping others in some way. You know, I think deep down, all of us, that's what we want to do. We all know that that's what makes life really rich. Almost everyone, if you ask them, what are some of the most memorable experiences of their lives, the really powerful experiences, it's times when they were doing things to be of service to others, you know, acting selflessly. And so I think if that's the primary drive, and then you add somebody who has a good business mind on top of that, now you've got a recipe for just amazing success.
Is there a moment in your life where you think, or you could think to, where that first moment or one of the few moments where you really had that servant heart and it was just so rewarding?
Yeah, it was, you know, I've kind of always had an aspiration to serve in some way. It was just always tempered with this huge ego that seemed to control a lot of my decisions. In the back of my mind, I was always thinking, what's in this for me? You know, like, how is this going to add value to my life? And again, coming back to your previous question, I don't think that that's necessarily terrible, you know, to have an idea of, okay, if I help others, how am I going to get paid in return? But I've noticed that it's significantly more rewarding when that motivation isn't there, when that voice isn't there in the back of the head saying, like, what's in this for me? Why am I wasting my time helping this person? And where that first, where I first saw that just pure aspiration to help was actually while I was confined. And, you know, I had an opportunity every single day to help people because I was very happy there as a result of mindfulness training. And most of the time, if you see somebody happy on the street, you just chalk it up to a good day. You don't think anything of it. But, you know, I was happy every day in a place where most people were miserable every day. And so when people saw me month after month walking around like I was on vacation, first they would ask, you know, what drugs are you on? And then when I
how do I
told
get
them,
some of that?
Yeah, exactly. And then when I told them I wasn't on any drugs, you know, I said, look, this is just a replicable process that you could apply as well. And just walk people through some very simple ways to train their mind in the same way that I was. And there was nothing in it for me. I mean, these people didn't have an opportunity to hire me. They didn't have an opportunity to recommend me to somebody. We were all confined to a military prison. And I just realized that made that moment or that period of my life so meaningful because I realized that through kind of a chain of events, I was actually affecting really the entire world just through helping people right there in a confinement facility. Like, you know, if I'm helping an inmate and they leave and they don't do something wrong, they don't commit another crime as a result of something that I helped them to do, that benefits a whole lot of people, you know. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm helping the guards and they go home and they treat their husbands or their wives better and their children better, that's good for that community. And so I could see, wow, even when there is really nothing to gain, just this effort to serve can really make an impact. And that's where it became so powerful for me. It was just realizing that even when there's nothing in it for me, if I'm really just doing what I can to help an individual to really uproot the core issues of what causes problems in our lives, then that made that experience incredibly meaningful. So meaningful, in fact, that, you know, most people sleep their time away while they're confined. And I actually would wake up an hour early every day to do more training to be able to help more people.
It's pretty awesome. I'm going to ask, I don't know if this will be a tough question or not, and I'm going to frame it in a strange way, but I've been really thinking about this a lot. For 3 years in a row, I volunteered for the Special Olympics and I coached a basketball team. And it was by far and away one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done in my life. I mean, it at the end of the season, it wasn't easy to get there every Saturday, particularly with kids. But those men and women who are my age or older or a little younger made more of an impact on me than I did on them.
Sure.
It was a phenomenal experience.
Yeah.
Now, this is the hard part of the question. I stopped volunteering and coaching simply because of work and family and just the time commitment. How hard is it to sustain servant leadership? How hard is it to keep doing it the next year or the next day or the next month where, you know, I think it's easy to sometimes give in the moment, particularly when you have a period of abundance, whether that be time, effort, money. But how hard is it to do it when, you know, you have a young child, I have young kids? I mean, how hard is it to keep it going?
Well, I guess that depends on, you know, how you're defining it. So if you're defining being a good servant leader, meaning that in addition to the work that you do and serving the people around you through your work, you're also going out and serving the community as a volunteer, that could be very hard to sustain depending on how many demands you have on your time. You know, we both have small children. You have two small kids. I have one. And, you know, as anyone knows who is a parent of young children, that's a full-time job in and of itself. And then you add trying to do some work on that, and then you try to add volunteering on top of that. That could be really tough. That can be very hard to sustain. However, being a servant leader in terms of, you know, if you have, even if you're not in an official leadership position, you can be a servant leader just as much as anybody else. But for certain, if you have a leadership position where you have direct reports working with you on your team, it's not easy to do. That is for certain, because there's so many demands on us for numbers that we have to hit and short-term issues that come up that need to be solved. So it's certainly not easy, but it's not complex. It's a very simple shift. And the shift is just to say, all right, I've got a team and everyone on this team has legitimate needs in their lives, both professionally and personally. And if I can help them to meet those legitimate needs, things like growing as a human being, growing professionally, continuing to grow in their skill set at work, you know, feeling like they have a purpose for being at work, feeling like they're empowered to make decisions, they have some autonomy, you know, things that we know through years and years of social science research that show, you know, that they increase engagement. You know, not only do you get a team of people that are happier, but they're much more engaged. And I think when you start to do that, if you can sustain that for enough time to start seeing results where you realize, well, wait a second, this may not be as easy as just barking orders at people or you know, demanding that people achieve outcomes without really considering all of the ways that all the things that they need to grow and to thrive as human beings. You actually see that it's easier to be a servant leader because now your team performs better, and whoever you report to, whether that's your supervisor or shareholders or a board of directors, whatever the case may be, they're happy, right?
Right.
So I think that's the trick, is if you can sustain it long enough to where you start seeing the results, I don't think there's any going back. It's just a matter of, all right, well, how do I strip away things that seem really urgent but aren't that important, and really keep in mind the things that are most important, which are, you know, you could have the things that are most important are taking care of team members. You could have the best strategic plan in the world. You could have the best get-to-market plan. You know, the problem is if you don't have a team executing that plan with high levels of engagement, it doesn't matter how great your plan
is. That's right,
right?
That's right.
So that's really the key, is to kind of move away from, all right, well, you know, all success depends on what I do. No, it doesn't. To a large extent, the success of a team depends on how engaged those team members are. And engagement is ultimately a direct reflection of how well do the leaders love those team members. And I don't mean love in, like, you know, some woo-woo, let's all be best friends type of thing. When I use the word love, I mean it in a very strict way, a very strict definition of it's a verb, it's an action. It means, you know, treating people with kindness and compassion and respect, regardless of whether or not we like a person. We don't even have to like somebody to love another person.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to treat them in ways that contribute to their long-term success and well-being. And part of that love is to even extend ourselves, to say, well, this is not easy for me. You know, I have a lot on my plate, but I know that if I spend a little bit of extra time hearing about the difficulties this person is having with their family, that's going to really help that person, and you'll see results from that. Or I know that if I spend a little bit more time mentoring this person, helping them figure out where they're going with their career, or spending a little bit more time training this person on a skill set that will benefit them both with my current team and beyond. Those things can seem hard, but the payoff can be tremendous, both in terms of the reward, in terms of happiness, but most certainly in terms of business outcomes.
Yeah, we've been teaching and talking a lot about this mindset shift around leadership, and that is, you know, most people assume that as a leader they're responsible for the results, and unfortunately, while it couldn't be further from the truth, the leader's responsible for the people who are responsible for the results. And once you're able to make this mindset shift of being responsible for the people themselves, your team, mm-hmm. instead of just the outcome, you then get a chance to really dig in and invest in them and see the best come out of them, which is ultimately what we're trying to do. Because once you do that, the results are going to improve based on what work they do. So it's everything that you just touched on there, Matt, is like it's not, like I say to people, it's easy to understand the concept. It's difficult to put into practice because so often we are judged by the number and we are judged by the score on the scoreboard and not necessarily the process. But the more we can dig in as leaders into the people that produce those results, the better off you're going to be. It's really fascinating stuff. You also touched on something that you kind of touched on the fringes of it, Matt, and that is how important is authenticity from a leadership perspective, and maybe even going one step further, how important is being vulnerable in the workplace?
Well, from the perspective of cultivating really powerful relationships, I think vulnerability is absolutely essential. And I think this is something that a lot of leaders struggle with, especially men, because we like to put on a front of that everything's fine all the time and we don't have any weaknesses in our armor, mm-hmm. so to speak. And I would imagine for women, it could almost be harder in some cases because if a woman shows vulnerability as a leader, maybe there's this idea that she's weak if she shows any emotion. But I think the exact opposite is true, and I think there are many examples of this with leaders who really get the most engaged team members consistently over time. You find that they have really intimate relationships with the people on their teams, where they see each other as completely human. And you can't do that if you're not vulnerable. Mm-hmm. What happens is there's a disconnect. It's a more of a manager-employee relationship. And unfortunately, management has nothing to do with leadership. management is about numbers. And management can be learned by going and getting an MBA. Leadership, on the other hand, is completely distinct from that. Leadership is about our ability to influence others and most importantly, to inspire the best in others, to inspire greatness in others. And, if the relationship is completely a mechanical relationship and there's just a team member does not see a leader as a human that they can relate with, then there's always going to be some barrier around that possibility of having a really deep relationship. So if somebody sees a leader as completely human, then there's so much more influence because somebody can identify and they say, wow, they're just like me, and yet they care,
right.
and yet they do these amazing things as a leader, which makes it even more powerful. If people see our vulnerability and we still extend ourselves every day to serve those people, and to have their long-term best interests in mind, and they know that, we build tremendous influence with people. And that's really the essence of leadership, right? Is the ability to influence the minds and hearts of other human beings. And there is simply no better way to build that influence than to consistently demonstrate that we truly love another human being.
It's really fascinating stuff. It's if you were to give, on the backs of that, and not asking you to go back to your, 22-year-old self, Matt, but if you were to a 22-year-old, 23-year-old modern professional approach you today, said, looking back, what advice would you give me, the things that I could start doing now that would set myself up to eventually, be a good leader of other people in the workplace? What advice would you give them?
Well, I think the first and foremost would be to say, it's the same thing that we were talking about with a leader who's already in that position, is that we tend to think that our individual performance is what's going to get us the furthest. And it may, if you're in a certain job, if you're in a technical type position, like you're a CPA or something like that, That may get you pretty far, but it's never going to get you into a leadership role where you can be successful right off the top. So what I would say, and there's a great, great book on how to do this without getting burnt. So anybody who hasn't read Adam Grant's book, Give and Take, that is an absolute, if you're interested in this topic of serving more, and especially serving without it hampering your career, but in fact benefiting your career, that book is chock full of
great. It's awesome. I'm actually, you know, it's so funny. I just finished it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Givers, Takers, and Matchers.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating. He tells so many good stories in it.
Yeah. So a perfect example of this would be people in medical school, right? So their first 4 years, the people who are the most successful are the ones who don't do anything to help other people. They just do whatever they can to look the best, to get the best grades. However, 4 years later, at the end of residency, the whole situation switches. The people who are top-rated physicians at the end of residency are the ones who are the best team players, the ones who are really thinking about, what can I do to fit into this team, to serve the other people on my team? And the reason for that is because none of us exist in a vacuum. You could be the smartest person in the world, the most talented person in the world, but if you can't create positive relationships with the people around you, mutually beneficial relationships, eventually you're going to fall flat on your face. Mm-hmm. And so what I would suggest to anybody entering their career, not to, of course, continue to grow, don't neglect your work. I'm not suggesting that at all. In fact, do the best you can to continue growing, but try to, as often as you can, be open to what the people around you need. And I'm not talking about your boss. I mean, of course, that's not a bad idea either, but your peers. Look at, what do the people around me need? What could I do to help them do better? And this is completely counterintuitive, right? Because we think, well, if I make my team members look better, they're going to be the ones getting the promotion. But any leader worth his or her salt, if they see that you are making the team better, eventually they're going to say, this person needs more responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so if you aspire to be in a leadership role and you don't just want to be a technician your whole life, that is perhaps the most powerful habit you can start to create now, is to look around at team members and say, what could I do to help them grow, to help them do what they're doing now better? And the same thing applies as you get a management position. Any leader worth his or her salt, when they see that you've, the best leaders out there are ones who make it so everyone on their team could do their job, right? And if you're thinking in terms of, you know, old school leadership, you think, well, I don't want to do that because that means that I'm not needed anymore. But a good leader is going to say, no, that means you need more responsibility.
That's right.
You've just created a team of leaders. You know, we need to give you more people to influence like that. So that would be the advice that I would
give. It's great advice.
Start developing that habit as soon as possible.
Well, let's end on some fun stuff. I want to touch on one thing before we get to some of my favorite questions, and that is the first time I emailed you, I got an email response that I thought was so unique, and I thought people should hear it, because right. I get an email back, and it's an automated email, and this is what it says, and you know. It says, I'm currently only working 5 hours per day so I can spend more time with my 11-month-old son. I only check email once or twice per week, so it might take some time for me to get back with you. Why this approach, and has it worked?
How do you define has it worked?
Well, it's just very unique. I don't know many people that would even think to only check their email once or twice per week. I mean, most people can't stop. They have it open all day. So it's very counterintuitive, right, to, you know, the world that most people live in, with their phone in their pocket and their, you know, and checking their email and their text messages all the time. Why have you decided to take this approach, and has it provided more freedom for your relationships?
Oh, for sure. And in fact, I don't think it's hampered any professional relationship either. Now, I know some people who are, you know, in sales or customer service would say, I absolutely cannot do that. And I agree, you probably shouldn't do that. You know, I have team members that handle inbound requests and handle customer service. So that's not my role. But, you know, I think a very important principle of providing good customer service is to set very clear expectations. So for me, if I email somebody and I don't hear back from them in 48 business hours, I think, well, that's not very polite. You know, why didn't they do that? However, if they simply set the expectation of, I'm out of the office, I'm traveling in Europe and I'm not going to get back to you for a week, I say, oh, well, no problem. And as you go down further in the email, it says, if this is really urgent and you need a reply more quickly, go ahead and give me a text. That's the quickest way to reach me. And I give people my cell phone number. And it's amazingly, no one's ever abused that. they text when it's really urgent. So what I've noticed is that we tend to get pulled in so many directions. And, if we have our email client open all day, it's just a mess. And we never get anything done that really moves the needle other than responding to other people's needs. So, of course, if you are in customer service, you need to do that. But even somebody who's in a customer service or sales role, what I would suggest is to try to chunk email into certain periods of time. So, for instance, let's say people expect a response within an hour. That may be the best that you can do. And if they don't actually need it, then you could just put an out-of-office reply every day that says, I respond to emails at 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock, and if you need a response more quickly, text me.
I think it's fascinating.
But that way, basically from 9 to 12, if you start work at 9 or 8:30, whatever, then you've got a 3.5 hour block where you can just really figure out what is really going to move the needle and start doing things like thinking at the higher strategic level, like what can I do to better serve my team members instead of just being always caught in the weeds with other people asking you to do stuff. So I've just found, again, I guess because I have team members that handle a lot of the emails that would need a quicker response, it hasn't hampered things at all. And it has certainly helped to allow me to be more focused on what I'm doing that I think is really important and will really move the needle. And as you mentioned, in terms of relationships, just being so much more present with the people that I'm actually with instead of being partially there because I just checked email and text 5 minutes ago and I'm all caught up in a frenzy of things I have to do. I just feel like, no, it's there are certain times where I know I'm going to check email and I just knock it out and provide thoughtful responses, and then it's done. And then I've got good chunks of time where I can just be really present with who I'm with, or if I'm working on a project, being fully present with that project.
It's great. It's just fantastic advice. It struck me, and it was very unique, and I liked it. And it set the expectation, just like you said. It didn't feel contrived. It felt genuine. So I really appreciated that. Couple of my favorite questions to ask. What's the best investment that you've ever made in your life?
Well, I think I don't know that this is going to be the correct answer, but my presumption is that it will be. But it goes right along with what you just asked about the out of office reply. When my son was just a few weeks old, it just hit me that there is absolutely nothing more important than this. And that is why I scaled back my work a little bit and let people know that, I am only working 5, or it's actually more like 6, but kind of depending on the day.
We got to change that out.
somewhere between 5 and 6 hours a day. And I just realized that, this is a human being whose happiness and future success, both personally and professionally, rests to a very large extent rests on how I help this human being develop. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me that there is nothing more important than this. And as kind of an expansion to that, is it just really, that really renewed my understanding of how important all the human relationships that we have are, and just realize that there are so many things that we think are so urgent and that we convince ourselves that they're important and we neglect the human beings around us. And I realize that I need to fix that. I need to change that. And so my guess is that taking more time to be with my son and really being fully present with him when I am with him, I think that is going to be the best investment that I ever make in many ways. I've already seen the effects in how it's helping professionally, just in terms of my focus on the importance of relationships. But just from a personal side, I can't imagine a more important return on investment than seeing a human being who feels completely loved and is able to offer that type of love to other human beings consistently, treat people with high levels of respect and kindness and compassion, and go out and do really amazing things in this world. Like, I can't think of a better return on investment than
that. It's powerful stuff. And I know he's only 1 year old, but what's harder, leading at work or leading at home?
I would definitely say leading at home, just because there, as I'm sure you're aware and any parent out there is aware, there is just a whole different dynamic to being in a long-term relationship and having kids. I would say that's more challenging, but maybe because of that, it can also be more rewarding, or at least just as rewarding as leading at work.
The hard part is when they start to talk back to you and they don't listen right away, and you're like, what just happened? You know? Matt, we thank you so much for being on the show. It was just awesome stuff. The work that you've done, the impact that you've made in the world, it needs to be heard by more people. So we're so pleased that you were able to take some time out of your busy schedule to share your story and share some of the knowledge in your head.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure.
Well, thanks again, Matt. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye for now.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. It's a real pleasure and honor to bring you stories to help you perform better at work and at home. It would mean a great deal to us if you'd leave a rating and review wherever you listen to the podcast, whether it be iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or Overcast. We get a chance to look at every single one of them, and it helps our exposure reach more people. Again, if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean a great deal if you'd share it. You can always mention at John G. Eads or any future guests you think we should have on the show. So until next time, be a great leader at home and at work.